This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Mommy versus daddy versus kisses versus what do you call your male father figure? Josh told us he referred to his dad as daddy. Most people said dad. Sort of felt like I was left adrift at sea, that no one else physically engaged with their father the way that I do by giving my old man smooches. And you guys have met him. He's hideous.
What would you do?
I never met him. Sorry.
You haven't met my dad before?
No,
I feel like he came to one of our events once. You might not have met him.
Well, maybe you kept him away from me.
It was that guy trying to kiss you.
My daddy. He's my daddy. Yeah, I didn't want you crawling all over him and giving him kisses. Mike, do we make arrangements to have my dad in studio?
Yeah, I was going to mention that yesterday, actually, when you brought him up. Maybe because you were talking about him making out with you.
Kissing me. Lovingly.
Maybe we
have you ever gone in for two?
Like a double kiss?
Like a mwah, mwah.
No.
All right.
I have placed my hand on his cheek.
For years, a previous host's father hated me, and I have no idea why.
Really?
We would go to, we would have morning show events, and this man would avoid me like the plague.
Man.
My dad worships the ground you walk on.
Oh, stop it.
Did he have a senior at the end of his name, this guy?
Probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But eventually I grew on him.
Well.
Literally.
Well. Josh growing like a fungus among us, and who knows if my dad will join us as we all give him kisses next week on the show. Dad versus Pa versus Daddy on Behind the Curtain. Can't even remember how it came up, but my oh my, am I glad that it came up. We talked to Josh yesterday, and somehow your father came up, and we come to find out that you called Dad Daddy for how long?
For his whole life.
For his entire life.
Called him Daddy.
Gotcha.
The room here seems stunned that it was, thought it was unusual, but I think it's more common than you guys believe.
I think you're right. We put a poll up yesterday, and we said, what do you refer to your male parent as? Mm-hmm. We said daddy, dad, father, or pa. And in first place, dad. Uh-huh. I think that's pretty standard.
What's the percentage?
90%.
Yeah.
And in second place, with 6%, was daddy.
Yeah, but also there are females in there, and that mm-hmm. makes a difference.
No, there are no females.
We don't let them vote on our polls.
Well, Joe, you've had children that have grown into damn near adults now. What did they call you?
Always dad. And they never called us daddy. Okay. Matter of fact, we didn't even talk baby talk to our children. No baby talk. Because
hey, Evan, get in here. I know you're 9 months.
But yeah, it was dad. Always dad.
Mike, what about you?
Yeah, I always called my dad and my mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that explains a lot.
It's you know, it gets much worse.
After the divorce, she started getting called Mary Beth quite a bit.
When it's grandparents, and they have, you know, I had a friend, he called his grandfather Pop Pop Tootie till he was like 50.
Jesus. The Pop Pop Tootie?
Pop Pop Tootie.
Pop 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 Tootie?
Yep.
Hey, it's Pop Pop Tootie. Hey.
Yeah, that happens a lot with grandparents. I knew a cousin of mine that would call a grandparent Meatball.
Well, that's funny. My kids call their mother's mother Mermaid. Because she had mermaids on their wall when they were very small children or just figuring out the language. They certainly say, they still say that now, one's 18, one's 20. Mermaid.
I'm trying to break the kids of the whole Jussie biscuit thing. Would really love for that to end. Because I don't need like a 25-year-old stepchild who will definitely live with me well into their 30s, if history is any indication, calling me Jussie biscuit when I'm in my mid to late 50s.
Well, I didn't know about the biscuit part.
Yeah, they tack on biscuit. Jussie if they need something. Jussie biscuit if they really need something. Have you seen my keys?
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood.
I have a Jussie keychain that
Would
they made me that I feel bad that if I don't have it on. But yeah, I got a little thing.
Biscuit wouldn't fit on there.
Yeah,
that's why.
Well, they don't know how to spell biscuit. I mean, I've helped them with their English homework, and it's a show.
I remember when I was younger, people would try to call me Mikey, and my dad nipped that in the bud real quick.
No! is Michael.
So, and for whatever reason, we talked about it years ago, but people in the newsroom now call me Mikey, and I don't know how to put an end to it.
Bring your dad in.
Like, I don't want to be a dick and be like, hey, enough. My name's Mike or Michael.
You don't
or Mr. Anderson.
Joey, I wouldn't be mad. You get mad?
Something about Mikey just seems childish, though. Like, Joey's fine, even Scotty.
What if they mispronounce it Mitchell?
I'll even take that. But for whatever reason, Mikey just has the connotation of some sort of toddler. I don't know.
You ever see a couple that dates and all of a sudden they start calling the other one instead of their name was Sandy, they start calling him Sandra.
Ugh,
name's Mike, they start calling him Michael. That's a thing. It is.
Like, I'm never going to start calling Sam Samantha.
Well, like, if you're upset at the other person?
No. That's a more sophisticated kind of thing, yeah.
When Buck gets pissed, I get the full name. When Buck gets pissed, I get the full name.
Well, that's better
than,
though.
Justin Schlegel. Like,
sorry.
But that's better than, like, Boo Boo.
Ugh, God.
Or Bay.
Oh,
those other pet names.
Schmoopy.
We say Bay a lot. Schmoopy?
Do you say Bay?
Nah, she says Bay.
Yeah, because...
I say you.
Katie will say Bay, but I never... It just doesn't... It's going to be so unnatural to hear me say that. It never makes it out.
I mean, even honey. I can't even bring myself to say honey.
I say, hey, woman. Woman!
Hey, you.
Woman! Woman! Help me, I've fallen.
How old were you, Josh, when your father passed?
29.
And then up until that time, you were calling him Daddy.
Yes.
Okay, so what's weirder?
And I called my mother Mommy.
The fact...
That's...
I'm serious.
I want to know a love like that. But let me stand in lockstep with Josh here. What's weirder? He called his mom and dad Mommy and Daddy. Mm-hmm. I just call my dad Dad, but whenever we say goodbye to one another, I kiss him on the lips.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah.
Now?
To this day. I'm going to probably see him Sunday and give him a right in the lips.
No tongue?
I mean, not if we're drinking. If there's been shine poured, maybe.
That's extremely strained.
No, not like tongue, but just like, mwah. All right, come here, Dad. Love you. Mwah.
No, that's really odd.
Really?
To kiss your old father. Like, you know my father.
Yeah,
can you imagine
I've kissed him.
Kissing him on the lips?
Oh. He hates it, but I ask for it every time. Yeah. We just had that. Josh had that level of love in connection with his mom and dad. Mommy, daddy. And I give my dad smooches on the lips. I gave my mom a crisp handshake goodbye.
Now, Josh, when you would talk to other people about your parents, would you say, hey, my daddy's going to pick me up?
No, I said father and mother.
Father. When you were, say, high school age or middle school age, when torment was more regular, did other people hear you calling them that and make fun of that?
No.
Sam, to the studio, please.
I don't think so. I think a lot of it is my uncomfortableness with intimacy. So I would see saying mom or dad as being too intimate.
Like, I think mom, it's the opposite.
Yeah, totally. Well, you're wrong. I don't like calling people by their name, like their first name. You'll rarely hear me people calling them by the, because it's too intimate.
Nothing was weirder, but my friend Robert Hartman referred to his parents as Steve and Nancy.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're nine, man.
In fact, as I got older and older, I think I probably stopped calling them Mommy and Daddy to their faces. I had to be in another room addressing them.
Mommy! Mommy, get it!
Because I'm so uncomfortable.
You know, you're right. I've never heard you say my name.
Yeah, I've never said your name.
I don't think
unless,
you have.
The only place I really say people's names...
If I'm not here?
On the air, because taking into consideration people don't know who you're talking to, if they're listening.
Is
so,
Mr. Ted Joe coming in tomorrow?
It's mandatory that I say it on the show. But even though I do that, it's still uncomfortable.
Sam Nash, associate producer, we met your father for the first time in an Uncensored last year.
Yeah,
and just the belle of the ball. Like,
oh, he's
everyone,
something.
The guy's great. He's great. The guy's superb. He was giving everyone hash oil, no shirt on, just chest covered in Yakuza tattoos. What do you call the dad? Dad, Daddy Paul, Peepaw?
Dad.
Mr. Man?
Oh, okay.
Keep it simple at dad.
You guys kiss?
No.
Damn it.
Okay. I've never one time kissed my father, I don't think.
ever?
No. As a baby? He's like, no.
No.
Can we ask Keith?
Keith, your father, great man, well-respected.
Yeah.
We're talking about what we called our fathers. Dad, Paw, right. Father, Peepaw, Mr. Penis, Captain Dong. And Dad. what did you call your father?
Dad. I just called him
called
Dad.
Called him Dad?
Yep.
Did you ever kiss him on the lips?
I didn't.
Damn it!
What about your mom?
My mom? On the lips?
No. What do you call your mother?
Mom.
Mom, not mommy?
No, I didn't call her mommy.
Mommy? What's wrong with
because
you?
Because they're...
maybe when I was two or something.
Mommy, give me a cold one.
I always said mommy and daddy.
Into his 20s. Yeah. You referred to mom and dad as mommy and daddy.
Is that a cultural thing, you think,
no,
Josh?
I don't think so.
I just can't picture a grown male Spiegel saying
daddy. Well, maybe I never
What did he call
up.
You? Did he call you Sonny?
Joshy? Yeah, Joshy a lot.
Joshy.
Yeah. Which I didn't like.
My father called everybody with a Y on his name.
Jussie. Oh, wait
it
a minute.
It would be Jussie, Joshy,
Joey,
Mikey,
Sammy.
Joey. Mikey. Tommy, Bobby, he grew up in Philly, man, so everybody's adding a Y to everything.
See, I'm trying to continue the tradition of the father mouth kiss with my son, Evan, but I am having him just like, kiss your dad! Kiss me! Kiss your father! And I will say, when I pick him up from daycare sometimes, and I mean, I lay one on him, he's just got those pink little soft, chewy bubblegum lips.
Come on, man.
He's my son! And they do give me the hairy eyeball.
You know what is interesting what Josh said about saying people's names? I don't really have a problem with that, but like my girlfriend's parents, like her dad, you know him, Keith.
Frank Bush,
baby. I don't say, hey, Legendary. Frank. I don't say Frank.
Right.
I don't know why, but I don't call him Mr.
You're older than Frank,
either.
Aren't you?
No, watch it. I'm not. Way younger.
Joe, please start calling him Daddy.
Yeah, got one on him. Hey, Dad.
Daddy, push.
And take a picture of him. Take a video of him and send it to him.
What do you call him?
I try not to find myself in a circumstance where I'm saying his name.
Why?
Daddy.
I don't know. I feel odd calling him Frank.
Mr. Daddy. Oh,
okay.
He's my girlfriend's father.
Right. Oh,
now,
yeah.
Granted, we're very similar in age.
Mr. Frank,
but, yeah,
see
yeah.
what he said.
Mr. Frank.
Daddy.
No, I don't think so.
We now take you behind the curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
So earlier on Friday, we had the honor and the pleasure of talking to Carissa Cooney, who was one of the Johns Hopkins specialists that helped with the man who had to have penis replacement surgery. And she was great. She was fantastic. She was a great sense of humor.
She was a good sport.
She was a great sport. Who are her friends that she brought? Getting behind the curtain here. She rolled up with a squad.
Yeah, I don't know. Who were they?
They were the Hopkins media relations people.
Yeah,
oh,
PR
really?
People. Yeah. They have two PR people that they need to send, just in case she makes a reference to white men's genitals.
Well, you'll hear coming up, she throws a big old glass of cold water on the white man penis sitch that had me slapping my knee.
Yeah, doesn't it hurt when it comes from a woman? More than, like, you know, we joke about it all the time, and I don't think twice about it, but when she said it, it cut a little bit.
Yeah, couldn't she have said Asians?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I'll say it too. She was as smart as she was attractive, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, she's cute.
Yeah, yeah. Gotta wonder how much of that's original model. She had a couple of the doctors hack her up and put her back
oh,
together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She probably has the inside track on that kind of stuff.
I like the question you asked. How far away are we, Joe, from just having aesthetic penis replacement
yeah.
surgery? Not because there's anything wrong with it, just because I want this big Loki scepter down there.
Well, I think about, you know, females can get larger breasts, they mm-hmm. can get tummy tucks, they mm-hmm. can get ass implants, they mm-hmm. can do all these things, but guys, what do you care about? You care about your hair, and you care about your junk, and nothing, we haven't, some reason, we've not been able to fix any of that.
And I've even stopped caring about my hair, so at this point, it's just all junk. And I was surprised to hear, because Josh probably covered it, but my brain just doesn't retain information, that he also lost his legs.
Yes.
And he didn't care. As soon as he had his penis back, he was like, whatever.
Well, he probably cared.
Well, you understand the level
like,
of care.
I got a broken arm and a hangnail. Take care of the arm first, and then we'll get to the fingernail. It was
Priorities.
Pretty fascinating stuff, man. We got to talk to Carissa Cooney, assistant professor of plastic surgery and reconstructive surgery at Johns Hopkins University, about the penis and scrotum replacement. Get ready for us to say penis a lot in this break. You did a story earlier in the week about a gentleman at Hopkins who has the world's first penis and scrotum transplant.
Yes, a war veteran from Afghanistan, and the Hopkins doctors were able to perform this surgery. Innovative, groundbreaking, successful.
Fantastic. And I said, Mike, you get someone from that staff on the horn. You get someone in here. So we are joined by, oh, Captain, my Captain, Carissa M. Cooney, the Master of Public Health. Master Cooney joins us on the program. Good morning, Carissa.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
This was such a fascinating story when we got the word on how this all panned out. Can you explain your involvement in the whole process?
So I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Plastic Surgery at Johns Hopkins, and I'm also the clinical research manager. So I oversee the three different reconstructive transplantation studies that we have. And reconstructive transplantation is the penile transplant program, hand and arm transplant, and also face transplant.
Wow. See, I'm glad you said that last one. Josh did the story of the chimp basically tearing the woman's face off like a Halloween mask so many years ago, and them attempting to do the facial transplant. And, you know, you see it. And there was the other gentleman, I believe, that had one, and the face was rejected, and they found another one for him, and he's getting used to that face. And that's a feat of medicine just inconceivable mere decades ago. And then this happens with a full penis and scrotum transplant, and we had questions.
Of course you did.
I was fascinated to hear that it's going to be functional. There's going to be urination that's going to be available. He's going to be able to...
Available
to him out of a vending machine. He's going to be able to perform sexually. He's not going to be able to procreate, but you know what? That'll be the next step. That'll be penis transplant 2.0. Just the fact that you were able to make all of this happen, my first question was, where did you get the replacement penis?
Well, we did get it from a donor like you would any solid organ.
God
so
bless
say,
that pain. God
yeah,
bless
absolutely,
that man.
And the family. Just the sheer generosity of the family and the ability of the organ procurement organization to make that request, really remarkable.
Did he get a choice, or was it just, this is what you got, you want it or not?
So we have to match the
basically you want to keep it as close to the original model as possible.
I'm trying to keep
darn.
I'm trying to keep this clean. I'm a little bit more used to public radio.
No, that's fine. But,
yeah. Oh. So
shout out Diane Rehm.
Yeah. You have to match the graft so that it's safe to give it to the recipient,
okay.
So to the patient.
Yeah.
And so by matching...
You're not going to give an Irish guy a Jamaican. It just ain't happening, man. But this, you got to keep within the realm of what it originally was.
Well, we do match for color, mm-hmm. for skin tone, but
I
not
don't care
necessarily
about that.
For race.
Yeah.
But the more important than that, perhaps, that's somewhat down to patient preference, but more important than that is making sure that it's an immunological match.
What does that mean?
So just that you're not going to have antibodies that are going to cause your body to identify this piece of tissue as foreign and mm-hmm. attack it and then reject it. And that's what we saw in, say, like the face transplant that had to be replaced again.
Josh Spiegel.
With the patient, he doesn't want to be identified. And what is his spirit like now? How is he doing?
He's doing great.
Yeah.
So he has really, because I know like one of the questions that y'all had, I believe it was from Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. Was, well, how do you accept this as your own?
Yeah.
Right. And really he has had no problem with that. He woke up and really is taking ownership of this. And I think it's very difficult for people who are intact to understand what it must be like to just not have, say, a penis,
mm-hmm.
And so then if you, it's more strange to go from having a penis to not having a penis due to an accident or something than it is to go from not having a penis to having a penis again.
Yeah.
So, we're really excited for him.
And I understand, again, we're talking to Carissa M. Cooney, Master of Public Health. She is an assistant professor of plastic and reconstructive surgery, a part of this historic world's first penis and scrotum transplant. I understand why this man would want to leave his identity in the dark until he wants to come forward with his story. Because it is interesting, as you said, that first he has men identify their manhood with, you know, their downtown entertainment district.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then it's removed in this horrific fashion in a theater of war. And he has to wonder, will I ever be complete again? And then he is, but it's not his. So it's going to be a little bit.
It is, but it isn't.
And it's like when you buy a used car. This isn't mine, but it's mine now.
I appreciate you know, how you're talking about this, but I think that, again, as I'm assuming that you're an intact male.
Is that true?
I can't base that on any personal knowledge.
But, I take Cialis.
But,
I'm a mess.
Intact, but, yeah. It's
40 milligrams.
I do think it's not possible for us to imagine how devastating such an injury can be.
Couldn't wrap my head around it.
And so I just appreciate the fact that, you know, the patient was willing to share his story because this was something that, I mean, he had thoughts of suicide. He hasn't been able to have a relationship. And now he feels like, even though he still doesn't have legs, because he also lost his legs in the explosion that...
Oh, I didn't know that.
In which he lost his genitals.
Oh, my.
You know, he feels like he can have a relationship again. He feels whole. Yeah. So it's a huge, groundbreaking transition.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I was wondering... And this, I don't know, this might sound like a clueless question, but was he more upset about losing his legs or losing his penis?
You know, I can't answer that question. I'm not
sure. Well, I'd
sure.
like you to guess.
I'll stand in. I'll go penis. I'll learn to walk on my hands.
I can say that, you know, his statement after being transplanted was that he felt whole again. So one could say that the third leg is probably most important. Oh. So.
And think about the donor that was able to provide this. They said, listen, this individual, this family member of ours is no longer with. But these are too beautiful to go to waste. This needs to end up somewhere. We can't burn this and we can't bury this. Please just put this in a Yeti cooler, and if anyone ever needs it.
Does a donor know that his penis is going to be used?
So that's a great question. I think it's important for people to know that when you sign up on your driver's license and say, well, I would like to be an organ donor.
Right there, big heart on my license.
Strong work.
Take everything from me. Like, matter of fact, I will tell you, though.
I'm actually writing that down right
now. Don't take mine, because you're just going to let some poor individual know, like, hey, we found a replacement. Bad news. It doesn't work. If we get back to the used car analogy, you'd get a used car, but there's no engine in it.
So if I could go back again to the donation issue. You're signing up for solid organ transplant. So these, the hands, the penis, the face, those are separate asks. They're still considered research. And so that's not something that would typically be taken without express consent from your family or your next of kin.
Mike Anderson.
Well, Chris, I got to ask, after you guys successfully did this, how did you celebrate? What do they do at Hopkins to celebrate something like this?
Pizza party?
Well, I think first of all, we sleep. And then...
Yeah.
No, we're just... Just very excited.
How long of a procedure was it?
14
hours. It took about 14 hours for the surgery. But the preparation, you know, it starts much earlier than that. So probably about 20 hours earlier when you're notified that you have a potential donor. And then the team has to actually fly out to the site where the donor is to procure the penis. And then they fly it back.
Put the penis in the basket!
When surgeons go into a surgery of that length and intensity, are there any, like, neurotropics that they would take?
What do you mean, like something to keep
this
you going?
Off the record.
Like a 5-hour energy?
Off the record. It's very much on the record.
There's hundreds of thousands of people listening.
But no, I'm just thinking, like, God, 14 hours? Like, I can barely do 8 hours.
This show, and I just hit a button labeled fart over and over again, and they're replacing a man's essence. So I'm thinking there's probably a supply of 5-hour energies and macchiatos on hand.
As far as I know, they drink coffee, lots of coffee.
Carissa,
there is only coffee.
You
coffee.
And your staff are caregivers.
They're
you
heroes.
Are professionals. You guys are artists. This is fascinating work. Congratulations on the successful surgery.
We'd like to stand in on the next one.
On the next one.
Observe. Can we observe?
Do you have a gallery,
I was gonna say,
a theater?
How involved do you want to be exactly?
Do not let him bring junior mints. Do not let him bring a junior mint. Because he will reenact the scene from Seinfeld where it ends up inside of the patient.
Well, we really appreciate the opportunity for us to talk about this, to let other people who may have a devastating penile injury know that there are options for care. And thank you again just for the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Can I ask one quick question?
Oh, no, sure.
How far away are we from not devastating injury, but just maybe not being happy with what you're currently dealing with? And then cosmetically.
Oh, just aesthetics.
That's right.
Just a replacement.
Right. How far away?
Right. So so you're basically asking if there's hope for the white man?
That's
yeah! Oh! Oh! Shots fired! She is spot on. She is not kidding.
I would say, you know, from a research perspective, the risk-benefit ratio is not sufficient to justify that, because you do have to be on lifelong immunosuppression, which definitely comes with adverse side effects like increased risk of cancer and such. Yes. So yeah, we're not there yet.
Keep us abreast.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Collectibles. You thought the stuff that you bought and invested in was going to be worth billions someday, and it turns out they're not worth the plastic that they're made out of. This all got started when I found some baseball cards at a shop, and then I started reminiscing about baseball cards. One we didn't get into was Garbage Pail Kids. Garbage Pail Kids Series 1 were huge in my neighborhood. If you found someone that had Series 1 or 2, man, oh man, you had that was gold to a child. You had something worth value, and now,
yeah. My buddy, I'm just thinking back. He did the whole baseball cards thing. He did Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah,
and I'm still not convinced that these things are like they're worth garbage now. You know, they're worth nothing now. But who's to say?
One day,
like how long do you hold? You hear the stories about, oh, we went into the attic and Grandpa had all these old baseball cards, and we just threw them all out. And then, you know, cut to 20 years later, and if we only would have held on to them, they'd be worth $1.2 million. I mean, you hear those stories, so it's like, you know, all these, you know, you just want to cut bait with these things and be like, ah, it's just junk. But is it?
Now, I do know when we had this conversation, I meant to bring this up, and I didn't, so I'm glad we're doing this behind the curtain. Buck's mom had Barbie dolls in the box, and like she had those remember the original Barbie dolls with that resting bitch face look with the droopy eyes, the kind of like get away from me, don't buy me a drink eyes. The original Barbies, very off-putting with their body language. She had a bunch of those, and I guess she got them appraised and wasn't worth nearly anything that she thought they'd be, and gave them to her daughter, and now their limbs are strewn about the yard. So yeah, who knows what you invest in? Fingers crossed one day it might come back around and your collectibles will be worth something. On Behind the Curtain. So yeah, we got talking not long ago. I think it might have been last week, how I went and visited a store in Virginia. Shout out Commonwealth Dry Goods for all your snacking needs. They got cheer wine there. So good. And it had baseball cards. It had baseball cards from like the 90s and 91, and they had Topps baseball cards, and they had the gum in there, and we were taking them out and looking at them, and I had to quite literally explain to my stepson what a baseball card was, like why this was a big thing. And we got talking about collectibles, and there were generations of kids that the collectible baseball card, really the collectible anything, you were always told, oh, this is going to be worth so much one day. Oh, this is going to put you through college one day. Oh, trust me, this one Transformer right here is going to pay for Evan to go to Princeton. Isn't that right, Evan, huh? Yeah, you're going to go to Princeton because of that Soundwave G1 boxed figure I have. I know, buddy. I know. You want to major in goldfish crackers. But unfortunately, that stuff hasn't really panned out. I don't think the Beanie Babies turned into much.
Remember the Beanie Babies?
I don't think the Cabbage Patch Kids turned into anything. Lord knows, when I had to sell off half my Transformers collection to move out to Cali, I didn't get nothing for it. I got dimes on a dollar for half that garbage.
What about like the coins, the collectible coins?
What were you talking about yesterday that I was slapping my hand to the point of carpal tunnel syndrome at those commercials?
Oh, you got to get the complete set.
The complete set. Get the complete set. It's gold embossed with a certificate of authenticity.
And they break the mold.
Ooh, they only make 500, and then the mold is destroyed forever. So you can't get a silver Ted Nugent coin. Worth approximately nothing.
Will they ever be worth anything?
No.
Who knows? Maybe like if the world collapses.
If it all goes to hell.
Then you have those. you may be king.
Yeah, you might be. That's going to be like treasure. That's going to be treasure. Oh, my God. Hold on.
There's
the
show Most Expensivest on Viceland with okay. 2 Chainz. And they had the most expensive.
That show's fantastic.
Have you seen
by
the one
way.
With the bug out bag, though? It's the super, super expensive bug out bag.
I saw the most expensive puppy, expensive water, and expensive weed. But what's in the bug out bag?
It comes with what appears to be like a credit card. It's in the shape of a credit card, but it's sectioned off into little squares, and it's gold. They're solid gold, so you could break off little solid gold squares, because they say if the end of the world happens and, you know, currency doesn't exist anymore, you can pay with little
pieces of gold. Yeah, because gold won't ever lose its value. Oh, here's one. I found one right here. Let me see if I got this guy ready to go. Yeah, here's
reminders. The World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and Flight 93. This beautiful limited edition sovereign is layered in magnificent 24 karat gold. A collector's item, it's valued at $100, but is now available for just $49.95.
Because in 10 years, it will be worth $9.95, and then it won't be worth the f***ing cardboard box that it came in.
You'll also receive this acrylic protective case to preserve it, and this individually numbered certificate of authenticity.
Ah, there it is, the certificate of authenticity. It's trash, man. Yeah, so you invested in those Beanie Babies, all those Barbies you thought were going to be able to buy you a Maserati when you got older. Why bother putting money into a CD, a 401k, or maybe investing it? No. Buy David Winter Cottages. Those will definitely put both of your children through school. How about Transformers? Oh, yeah. Evan's going to eat good in the neighborhood because
I have Transformers. Your dad had the, what is it? The
David Winter Cottages. God,
which he swore would be worth something.
Yep. David Winter Cottages. DavidWinterCottages.net. You can find these things. Oh, look. There's the castle in the sky. There's the orphanage. It was just the mill house. Oh, I'm getting PTSD looking at these things.
I would be lying to myself and to everybody that if I didn't think that there's a glimmer of hope in me that if I just hang on to my car long enough that it'll eventually become worth something.
But the S2000?
Yeah.
You gotta
wonder.
That's
a long way away. Oh. And there's already stuff happening. It's financially where I'm like, I may need to get rid of it.
I luckily feel like I'm of level-headedness enough to know, hey, that in-the-box Thundercracker and Skywarp I have aren't going to buy Evan 2 textbooks at a community college. He'll definitely go to with his 2.1 GPA like his old man. But I grew up being told that these cottages that my dad would collect were going to send us to Harvard. They were going to help us make a down payment on our first home. You guys are going to see the world when I sell these things. Because they would make these things, these cottages, then they'd break the mold.
Broke the mold, man. That's the king.
Oh, I remember one. I think it was the castle in the sky. Oh, listen to this tale. The castle in the sky. They were going to make 500 of them, but they had to move the mold from one facility to the next. And as legend goes, the truck crashed and the mold broke. And they were only able to make 100 of them. They had to cut the production by 4/5.
Does your dad have one of those?
He has one.
He does?
Yes.
Maybe that's the one.
And he paid hundreds. The truck crashed. And then they got bought by a Chinese company, made 5,000 more molds, and now there's a trillion of them out there. And I can buy a case for about $20.
Damn.
And they're just going to collect dust, and I'm going to have to throw them in a trash can. And it ain't worth the cardboard that they came in.
Somebody says, my pops bought the NASCAR die-cast cars for 20 years ago. $50 to $100 a piece. He has over 100 of them, and they are now worth... Oh, damn it. It jumped on me. Where's the end of it? Now worth...
Oh, it'll
now
come
worth,
back. Worth...
Ah, worth. Where's the second part of your text?
Now worth... Just wait until he finds the
oh, now worth...
Part.
Now worth... They are worth nothing now. They are worth nothing.
Oh, nothing.
I remember somebody collected the Hess trucks. The Hess truck's back and it's better than ever. Had the complete line of the Hess trucks.
Yep.
I don't know if they're worth anything.
Can I tell you why I know that they're not? Because 1 month after moving into Casa del Schlegel, the neighbors next to us moved and gave us a box full of Hess trucks for the kids to play
See?
With. In the box, brand new, completely fresh. fresh batteries and everything, not worth the cardboard they were surrounded in. So I have to ask, what did you have? What did you collect? We were joking yesterday about the grandparent that I had on my dad's side that collected the state spoons. They had state spoons. Every time they'd go to a state, they'd get one of these dumb spoons and put it in a rack. Oh, I'm having the worst time finding Wisconsin. And if they got the whole collection, oh, they'd be able to sell it to a collector. What collector's out there flush with cash looking to buy 50 stupid spoons?
Somebody says they have two Rubbermaid containers full of unopened Micro Machine play sets.
Oh.
Keeps checking eBay, and they are worth $5 a piece.
$5. Not worth crap. Where's my buddy Jim Grove that checked in? He talked about video games. He says video game stuff, Amiibos and Skylanders and Lego Dimensions, crazy high prices. For example, some Disney Infinity characters were $90 when they launched, and now on eBay or online they go for $2. Let's go to the phones, 410-338-1098. Let's talk to Jim in Baltimore who's been holding. Jim, good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
Hey, so you remember back in the 80s, we all rode BMX bikes, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, there was a company here in Baltimore called Hutch.
Yeah, I know Hutch.
And, yeah, so a buddy of mine had a bunch of old Hutch stuff. He sold a set of tires, 30-year-old BMX tires, on eBay for $855.
See, that's the thing I'm saying. Like, some of these collectibles aren't worth anything, but... Like a BMX bike, like you look up like a mongoose or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like rebuilding these old vintage mongooses, uh-huh. And you still have a frame and tires complete. They're going for thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
That's wild. Here, let me give you an example, and thank you for the call, buddy. I have a Transformer figure named Sideswipe, and they used to come with missiles and guns and all that sort of stuff. He's not worth much. But to get the plastic blaster that he had, because a lot of stuff that goes out of production, they don't make it anymore.
Right.
Aftermarket stuff, you have to sometimes machine stuff. Just to get a small, dumb plastic gun was $15. A piece of plastic the size of a toothpick, $15, because the molds don't exist anymore. They don't make any new stuff. So maybe that's where a lot of this stuff is, like things to repair them. Internals, mechanics. Let's go to Sam in Alexandria. Sam, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's
hey,
up,
Sam?
Not much.
What do you got?
So I actually started collecting the Beatles albums on vinyl.
Yeah.
But I don't get the re-releases. I have all original releases,
uh-huh.
Like when they first came out in the 60s.
Right.
And most of them are pretty standard. The Butcher album is the only one I still need, which is very, very hard to come by because of the story behind it.
That's the one where they like chopped up babies on the cover?
Ugh. Yeah, and the album or the record company called it back,
right.
But instead of destroying it, they just put the new album cover over it. And when people found this out, they were tearing the new album cover off of it to reveal the original cover beneath it.
So let me ask you, how much do you think you've invested in your Beatles album collection?
Probably a good $1,500.
$1,500.
Tomorrow,
I found a record guy that he knows I wasn't buying them to sell them to make a buck. I'm buying them because I actually do really like the band. So he was selling them to me for a pretty decent price. One of them, which is worth a good $400 or $500,
wow.
He sold to me for $75 on my birthday.
What? Which, that doesn't make sense. Why would he do that?
Why would he do that?
Why would he do that?
I feel like it's not worth what
he's
telling you.
He was actually a really nice guy.
Oh,
but
stop.
No,
there's no
stop.
Such thing. We're all garbage.
He's the nice guy. The $400 or $500 album he's selling to you for $75. Nobody's
like
that nice.
There.
Yeah.
Well, this one was nice because you can actually hear, it was supposed to be the Let It Be album, but you could hear the guys talking between songs.
But sometimes a collection is only worth what a collector will pay. So let's just say you had to sell all that stuff lump tomorrow. Are you getting $1,500 back for it or are you getting $700, $800? Because I know when I sold my Transformers collection that to me, if I was going penny for penny, was like $5,000, I got $1,500 for it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the Beatles. You can always find a collector for the Beatles.
Well, it also has to do with how rare the stuff is.
Thank you, Sam. Yes.
I'm looking up old mongooses. This is the thing. Like, okay, so you have like a 1977 old school mongoose, right?
Yeah.
And then it's 1987. The thing's 10 years old. It's 1990, whatever, and it's 15 years old. You're like, we're really hanging on to this. Get rid of it. It's an old piece of junk.
Mm-hmm.
Come 2018, $800.
Wow.
$850.
And you said it yesterday.
$800.
Sometimes stuff comes back around.
Yeah.
Like when, like, I keep bringing up my Transformers collection. It's the only thing I've ever collected. When the movies came back out, they became popular again, and people wanted the old stuff. When you have nostalgia rekindled, nostalgia.
And the people who are nostalgic finally have some two cents to rub together.
Exactly. Finally have a couple of kids that are 30.
79 Mongoose Moto Mag, $1,100.
Remember dice caps? I remember dice caps were so badass. Did you put your pegs on the front or the back? Or both?
I had pegs on both, I think.
Badass. Let's do one more call here to bring it full circle. Jack says you collected baseball cards for how long?
I've collected baseball cards for about between 10, 15 years.
Oof. How much you think you spent?
A lot more than what they're worth. That's for sure. I had Tony Gwynn rookie cards. I had Cal Ripken rookie cards.
Right.
I had Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards. And the thing is, they are worth money if you get the first edition.
Right.
The first runoffs with them. I thought I was sitting on a landmine a couple times, and I wanted to go see how much they're worth. They're only worth maybe 20, 30 bucks.
Oh, that's for sure.
A card.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying.
The books were, or the sleeves and everything were worth than what the cards were actually worth.
They're worth nothing now, but who's to say they're not going to be worth something in 20 or 30 years? You never know.
It's luck meets preparation. If baseball cards become huge again. Josh, you ever collect anything, bud?
Just tears, Justin. Just tears.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That is the saddest thing he said. And he said a lot of sad stuff. Oh. He keeps them in little jars labeled with what made him cry. Oh, Justin, have I showed you this jar? It reminds me of a fruit salad I had.
It's time to go Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Lobster. Is it overrated? Is it too expensive? It's definitely too expensive right now. It's in short supply as the Chinese have discovered it. And now they're all eating them up. And you know what? I wanted to get more into this. We didn't have time because we were just talking about the love or hate of lobster. Josh, the Jewish people consider lobster a dirty creature, a bottom feeder.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got just to,
some Jewish people.
Some Jewish people. Not old lobster Speegs over here. Old shrimp Speegs. At any point, have you ever had a shrimp or a mollusk?
No, I've never had any of that.
What's another dirty food? Okay, we know swine. And we know mollusks and crustaceans. Is there anything else in there?
Not
pecans, maybe
eel.
But they're on the bottom.
They suck also.
Yeah, they suck. Yeah, not that I can think of. Mike Anderson's a bottom feeder.
You can't eat Mike. Oh boy, thank God you can't. Mike, when the world falls apart, Josh won't cannibalize you because of your eating habit.
It just kills me that I know you're missing out on so many great foods, like bacon.
Yeah.
Like a bacon crab
but
cake
it doesn't
sandwich.
Even, I don't even think about it because I've never had it. So
can't miss it if you never had it.
You know, ain't that the truth?
I feel like if you ate a bacon-wrapped shrimp, it'd be the same as doing a line of cocaine at this point. Like you ate one crab cake and just your head would fall off your shoulder.
I mean, even something as simple as like a bacon cheeseburger, to me, that might be my number one. I'm a simple man.
A bacon cheeseburger is really damn good. Oh, we didn't talk about this. We got only a couple of minutes here. We had a friend of ours who had a friend that made shredded lobster sloppy joes. Like they shredded up lobster like carrots and they mixed it with our buddy Buzz and mixed it with butter and put it on king rolls. And served it, and the guy whose house he served it at that we eat from time to time said it was too much lobster per bite. It was an excessive amount of lobster.
Excessive amount.
Said it sounded good on paper. They made it two or three bites in. They're like, ugh, this is too much lobster. Lobster, is it overrated? On Behind the Curtain.
Talking lobster.
Can I throw you in the Wayback Machine here for a second,
sure.
Scott? You might not have remembered these, because I'm not sure if this was in your area in Long Island where you grew up. But, Josh, I know you remember seeing one of these commercials around these parts.
It was down in the Caribbean, called a marlin. Fighter. Pulled us all over the Bahamas. Actually hooked him on the ship's anchor.
Some stories of the sea can be hard to believe, but here's one that's true. Chesapeake Bay Seafood House has the area's largest selection of your favorite seafood. Really?
Is that still around?
Chesapeake Bay Seafood House. The best fish story from the bay.
That's wow.
Of course, a little one like that, and I usually throw back.
That takes me back to my horrible childhood.
Oh, God.
What was it called? Chesapeake Bay
Seafood
House? Chesapeake
Bay Seafood House. And get all the seafood you can eat.
Red Lobster for the seafood lover in you.
Yay! Red Lobster's still around because they adhere to quality cooking practices. I think the Chesapeake Bay Seafood House and their buffet sent people out of there getting the watery movements, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Not good.
I found one.
Is there one still in existence?
I don't know. It's on Facebook. Chesapeake Bay Seafood House?
I found one in Vienna, Virginia, closed permanently. It's got the big red banner up top.
So, yeah, we're talking lobster.
Lobster.
Apparently, there's a shortage, so the price is going through the roof as if it wasn't expensive enough. Things like bad weather, frozen fisheries, international demand. The price of a lobster has soared as high as $15 a pound.
Oh, it's wicked expensive.
Almost double the cost from last year, according to the Boston Globe. And it's even pricier for the pre-shucked stuff. Like you get for the roll, like a lobster roll.
Uh-huh.
That's selling for about $40 a pound.
Oh, God. That's wicked expensive.
Welcome to Worcester.
Worcester. You want a lobster roll?
So, yeah. If you're looking for some lobster, it's going to be expensive, apparently.
And I... born and bred in Maryland, will probably live here, raise my children here, die here. Fingers crossed sooner rather than later, right? And I'm a crab guy. I enjoy some scrimp. If you deep fat fry damn near anything, I'll eat it. Clam baskets for days. Shout out to the good folks at the Hard Yacht. Yeah.
You did all. You did old clam basket.
Yeah, clam basket. Oh, makes me miss my ex.
Clam strips.
The clam strip. Oh, I love clam strips. Clam strips are amazing.
I can't do the clams or oysters today.
I can't.
Every effing day, it's you with the
You ever got clams over at Hard Yacht right on the water? Get
clam
a crush?
Strips?
Deep fried clam strips?
It's a mental thing, but it's just too disgusting.
Whatever. You and I had a beer the other day, and I got... some Thai coconut mussels.
Mm.
Oh, they're great.
Sounds so good. You got the juice at the bottom.
Yeah,
you get the bread. Oh,
God,
so good. You just wring that bread wedge out into your mouth.
I've never had any of that stuff. Crabs, lobster, mussels.
Is it a shellfish thing with the Jewish people?
Yeah, never.
It's a filthy creature,
right? We just don't eat bottom feeders.
Josh comes from proper breeding.
I mean, you'll eat a cow that eats grass, but...
Meanwhile,
what do you think fish eat, too? That's the other thing. What do you think fish eat?
Fish, they're not bottom feeders.
Fish are vegans.
Okay. Certain fish, maybe, but those are not eaten.
And as we all know, vegans are better than you.
Don't go up against the Bible, Mike.
Yeah, Mike.
But does any part of you, like, do you ever watch, like, a Red Lobster commercial and think, man?
Yes. When I was a child, when those Red Lobster commercials, I wanted to go to Red Lobster. looks so great.
What's the part of the Red Lobster commercial that entices
you?
The shrimp.
The butter.
The butter dunk.
And the butter dunk and the butter that just goes splashing.
Yes.
Everywhere. If some son of a bitch ever dunks their shrimp like that in front of me. Like, if you dunk your shrimp with that level of force, you've got to get a new butter cup after that, because there's just liquid butter everywhere. But it does make me want to get it. From what I was told, that's like, it's like canola oil and kerosene that they use in those commercials.
Yeah, whenever they film it, it's always never the real food.
Oh, yeah. But this lobster story crossed our desk, according to the Boston Globe. Oh, shout out Belichick. Fingers crossed this year you can pull out a win in the Super Bowl.
F you, Belichick.
Son of a bitch in your stupid hoodie. And I was just thinking, like, of all the times that I've enjoyed a crab cake from Jimmy's Famous Seafood, the clam strips and all that, I'd say in my top five seafoods, lobster ain't on there.
No, I don't like lobster.
It doesn't do a lot for me.
No.
Why?
It just, to me, it's rubbery.
Rubbery.
Oh, really?
Out of that big, beautiful, fat lobster. Okay, you got the tail meat. The body, for the most part, is just goopy, weird, gunky, bone marrow, mollusk-looking garbage. You know, some fancy pants foodie out there is going to say, oh, you must suck the brain marrow out. Or what? Ugh, yuck.
Nah, you're just eating the tail and the claws. That's all you're eating.
And that's it. And the claws are mushy. The tail is, you're not getting a lot out of there, and you're paying like a car payment for a dinner.
Here's a text that says, I bought two lobsters from Maine and had them shipped in for Valentine's Day.
Oh.
Two lobsters from Maine shipped.
Shipped.
They were £3 each. I just paid around blank total.
Okay, two lobsters from Maine.
£3 each.
£3 each.
Six total pounds of lobster shipped from Maine.
$50.
$150.
Oh, God.
Call this person, Mike. Call this person. I want to. Was it worth it? Was it worth it?
You know what kind of
Come
dinner
on.
You could get?
You see it? You find it?
Yeah.
Great.
Give them a call. See if they'll answer. I just want to know. For what?
For what?
It's that, like you said, it's just that it has that prestigious air about it.
You're right. It's got the lobster is a fancy food.
It's a fancy food. It's elite food.
But I beg of you, look up lobster's history.
Of course, we all know that.
Lobsters were once fed to poor people and
prisoners.
Yes. It was just this trash, awful garbage meat. It was called in colonial era America garbage meat. They would feed it to people in cages and dogs with mange. They'd give them lobster. And yet, for some reason today, if you look at that, do you want to add a lobster tail to your meal section of the menu? It's like an extra $20.
Line six.
Let's go to Justin in Baltimore. Great name, bad dining decisions. What's up, Justin?
Morning, gents. Morning, Josh.
Mark.
Good form.
Now, $150, two lobsters shipped from Maine, £3 each. At the end of it, was it worth it?
I guess the experience is worth it. I mean, you just, you know, they look good on a plate, but after you do all the work to cook them and they're all watery, I don't know. It just kind of feels like too much work.
I mean, how many bites of food per lobster did you get?
The tails were pretty big. It was a lot of meat. We actually didn't even finish it all. We made lobster bisque.
Oh, okay. But, that's a big
ass
lobster.
Married or dating?
Married.
So you're married. It's Valentine's Day. You guys, did you cook together or you cooked for her?
Nah, she doesn't cook. So I do all the cooking.
So you did a nice Valentine's Day. Was it a surf and turf?
Yeah, we did steak, lobster. Yeah, not sure what the sides were. They don't really matter.
That's like the big Valentine's Day meal is the surf and turf.
So it's not so much that lobster is like her favorite. You just went through the effort to say to your beloved as she sat across on that candlelit table, I ordered these from Maine for you, my sweet. Enjoy that filet mignon.
But do you guys really love lobster? Is that a thing?
No, you know what? After getting them, I think it was more how it was shipped and how it was presented. Yeah. It was really cool how they came, and the guy who ships them puts in a personal note, you know, says, I hope you enjoy these. I forget what the guy's name was.
Yeah, it says, thanks for your money, sucker.
It's lobster!
Lobster, oh!
Oh, yeah!
Oh, look at that. Oh, we got ourselves a bountiful harvest from the sea.
Lobster sucks.
It's overrated. I mean, if you have a choice between a butter-slathered lobster tail or like a Jimmy's Famous crab cake, which is 99% lump and charred to a perfect golden brown, I go crab cake every time. And that's not the guy from Maryland speaking. That's just someone that's eaten seafood from sea to shining sea. By the way, I'm not saying it's disgusting. Lobster's very edible, but it's the prices that they charge and the fact that it's got this air of being all fancy pants about it. It's a rich person food. Get the F out of here with all that. Crab and shrimp and clams, oysters are better. I'll even eat a scallop.
I don't That's the one thing I don't mess with, scallops.
You don't mess with a scallop?
I don't know why.
I love a scallop. Scallops are very diverse. Yeah. A scallop's like the tofu of the sea.
I'll eat it, but it's never in the top five.
Sometimes it gets that weird, gamey, slimy flavor to it.
Scallop sucks. A bad scallop is like a large booger, but a good one is very well done. So we ask you, 410-338-1098, you love it? You hate it? Is it overrated? Is it priced accordingly? Let's talk to Kurt in Pasadena. Has been holding for a little bit. We appreciate your patience. Kurt, good morning.
Morning.
Morning, buddy.
Morning.
So what's going on?
How you doing? What's up with you, dude?
How you doing, man? We've been asking ourselves, how's Kurt? What's up, Kurt?
Kurt's okay.
Fantastic.
So lobster.
Yeah.
I work for a distributor that does most of the regional distribution in Baltimore.
Wow.
If you can think of a good grocery store or two, we do those guys. We do your restaurants and all. So
yeah.
I was a lobster buyer I bought lobsters for our company for about 10 years.
Wow. So, you're the dude. You're the guy.
You're the man. You're the lobster dealer in this area. You're the hookup. Your pager goes off with a bunch of sevens, and it means lobsters are needed.
So were you eating lobster? You probably weren't even eating it.
So here's how I like to do it. I like to stack them on a table like crabs. I'll take, 30 or 40 of them and get about 5 or 6 or 8 people and just rip into them like crabs. And that's really how they do them in New England up in Maine. Traditionally, it's not a white tablecloth thing by any means.
Would you say it's over around here, though? The price versus what you get, it just doesn't seem worth the investment.
Think about what they've done with the byproducts and why the meat costs have gone up so much. I mean, who had macaroni and cheese on the menu until they put lobster in it?
Right.
So the demand for lobster nationwide, if not for the meat itself, is staggering.
Let me ask you this. Do you know, maybe you don't have the answer, maybe you don't, but will we ever run out of lobster?
Probably not. It'll price itself out so it comes off menus. And, other like emerging economies like China and even Europe will keep going pretty much no matter the cost.
Oh, God, don't let the Chinese find out about lobster.
And cooking up a pile of them. Yeah, go ahead.
They already know because that's what's driving a lot of the prices up. Think of when Chinese New Year's in, I think, February, January.
Oh, they're just chucking them back?
Well, no, they'll air freight them all the way over to China, and that's the least supply time of the year, but Chinese New Year is one of the highest demands of the year.
Well, if you're done educating us.
What's your favorite seafood?
Ohio. You guys were talking about scallops. They're scalloping right now off our coast, and they're some of the best of the best of the year.
You mess with oysters at all?
Sure, we sell a lot of the local oyster bars. Their oysters.
What do you think of them clam strips? A nice breaded.
Yeah, Mike doesn't like clam strip. A breaded clam strip.
Love clams. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, clam strips are great. Thank you for the call, Kurt. Appreciate the insight.
God, that guy's, Mike, get his nose. He's gone.
Damn it. Call us back, Kurt. We're going to get your number.
He's like the aficionado.
The guy, when you're sitting there drinking, there's no better, finger food if you want seafood. Like, if you're going to do the peel and eat shrimp, okay, you're going to get messy.
Yeah,
but if you just want to chuck something in your mouth over and over again because your grinder date didn't show up, eat those.
I will mess with some clam chowder.
So you won't eat clam strips, but you'll eat clam chowder?
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, a clam strip,
it's the Peter North of soups.
The number one thing it has going for it is it's deep fried, right?
You can
pretty much deep fry anything.
Yeah, you can.
Look at that. Look at that basket of clam strips.
Good.
With some French fries underneath it and a little lemon wedge.
Yeah. That's where you need to be. Whoa, Kung Fu Gary has done himself some lobster fishing. What's up, Kung Fu Gary?
Oh, good morning crew. All hail to you guys. You guys are great. Thank you, Mr. Spiegel, who sits high but looks low.
Oh, bless you.
The lobster story is years ago, I went to the Cayman Islands, and I'm a scuba diver, and I went snorkeling. There's a huge, giant lobster sitting right 10 yards off the shore. So I went in and bought a spear and speared the lobster, and me, my wife, and another couple were eating the lobster, and a family came by with their snorkeling gear. Oh, we're going to see the local lobster, Big Jim. He's been there 20 years. I said, oh, I was embarrassed. I was sitting there eating him.
You ate Big Jim!
You ate Big Jim!
You son of a...
You ate Big Jim!
What have you done? You're eating Big Jim! That was hilarious. Mike, I'm putting him on hold. Something. Give him promotion assistant Matt's wallet or something. That's hilarious. Let's go to... Oh, Andy, line two. I was hoping to talk to this guy. Andy, are you currently a Maine resident, or did you used to live there?
I used to live there. I went to high school, elementary school, a couple of years in college up there, and worked lobster boats for about 3 summers.
Now, let me ask. Wow. I had a relative that went... Actually, Buck's parents went to visit some family in Maine, and they said that when you go to Maine... Because it's so plentiful there, obviously prices are lower because they don't have to be shipped. And they're eating lobsters off a table the way that
we'll... Yeah, like the way we do crabs.
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah, you know, when the guy that I worked for is a local guy up in Cundy's Harbor. He had, at the time, he had 3 boats. Now he has 5.
Wow.
But anytime I go up there to visit family, friends, things like that, I can go right on the docks and get them for like $1 a piece.
Wow. Damn. How big's that lobster?
I'll get into that in a second, but usually a Maine lobster is between a pound and a quarter, maybe a pound and a half. And that's where the misconception comes into a lot of different people.
Yeah, everybody wants the big ones. The big ones aren't as good.
Well, hello.
No. And the thing about it is, if you want a Maine lobster is between a pound and a quarter, and it's caught within about a mile of the coast, right along the shoreline.
Oh, wow.
A North Atlantic lobster, which is the ones that you guys see that are out deep water, the ones that are 2 pounds, 3 pounds, and they're nowhere near as good as a traditional Maine lobster. So
here where like blue crab versus Dungeness crab, like a big Dungeness crab is, it's fat as hell, but it tastes like styrofoam. Then you get a blue crab,
right.
It's smaller, but it's so much better.
Right, exactly right. Yep, and a lot of companies, they'll promote themselves as a Maine company, which they are from Maine, and you're buying lobster from a company from Maine, but it's not a traditional Maine lobster.
And
yeah, there's a big difference.
Are you saying to me that smaller is better?
In this particular case, yes, it is.
Yes! Yeah! Suck it, Scott! Huh?
Mr. Oh, look at the size of this thing. I've got to coil it around my thigh. Yeah! Yeah.
Well, I think one of the companies, I think maybe like, I don't want to say which one, but one of the
Chef Boyardee,
the bigger chains got popped for that. They were claiming that it was like Maine or something, because there's so many different lobsters. I mean, you get a lobster down in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, you know, but it's different, a different kind, and it's not as good.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
So yesterday, we went to the drag show, Sam, and man, oh man, was it great. What a fun time. We'll recap it on Monday. But Scott told me something off the air I didn't know, and I thought it was kind of fascinating. Sam organized a little gathering at a local venue where there was going to be a drag show, and there's going to be some music and some fashion, some song and some dance. And when we got done with the break, I was like, hey, would it be funny maybe if I went and drag? And I didn't know that was like that's like a no fly zone. Like, no, don't you dare. Don't
well,
do that.
Look, if you did it well enough, nobody would know, really.
But what about this beard? Like, I'd have to shave my beard.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'm just going to look like Zach Galifianakis when he decides to cross dress in a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, it could just be. It could. But depending on how you do it, and like you're, you know, no stranger to dressing up.
Hi.
And you kind of, you get, it wouldn't be a send up, it would be a tribute.
Yeah, it'd have to be, you're right. It'd have to be a tribute, not a send-up. And I couldn't just go in there and just like put on one of Buck's dresses and be like, hey, look, I'm one of y'all. Like, no. Mm-mm. No, I mean, if I did it, I'd have to do it.
Right.
Like shave, foundation, eyes.
Shave everything.
All of it completely smooth like a Formica countertop. Great. Now I got to return a halter top. All right, coming up, we talked to Sam about a little excursion we had. We can't wait to recap it on Monday about our trip to a drag show. Oh, hey, look.
It's Britney, bitch.
Yeah. We're still trying out new theme songs for Sam.
This is the one.
Is this it?
You don't need to go any further.
Oh, yeah. So, Friday, you're doing the damn thing. You're going out.
Yep.
Where? Okay, you want to give up where, or you just want to say the theme of what we're doing so we just don't have, like, a hive of locusts to say?
Yeah, I was
joined
thinking not.
Joined in studio by assistant producer Sam.
Yes. And I was thinking Friday not night. To give the location because I don't want tons of people to show up.
Hey, Sam.
Yeah, exactly.
No, trust me. You spend 10 minutes with me, I'll change you. I will. I'll be the one.
Nah.
Mm-mm, you're missing all.
Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, a drag show on Friday. Yeah.
First one?
My first one.
Oh, cool.
Losing my drag virginity.
Wow.
So I have no idea what's about to go down.
God, if I could find the pictures of that one I went to that one time.
Woo, doggy. Buddy boy.
And is it a theme or is it just wide open?
I have no idea. I'm so at a loss. I mean, they all have their own characters, I suppose you called them, or their own other personas.
Yeah, they don't. Well, the one we just went to Key West, and Key West has a nice big gay hotbed of activity down there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
My wife loves drag shows, drag queens, loves the whole thing. And we went to one. And they have their drag. It's much like a RuPaul. RuPaul is his persona, and they have their own persona. They become that person, and then they'll do trip. They'll come out. The one I saw, they were lip syncing, and they just do performances.
They just dance around.
Yeah, they dance around and lip sync.
Dance on me.
Okay. Yeah, I'll pay top dollar for them to get down there. Hey, take extra good care of her, girl.
Yeah, I'm looking at the description of the event. It says,
okay, there you go.
Packed full of fashion, art, teeth.
Can I tell you what I'm most excited about? I love the filth. I love the fashion. The music's going to be great.
I'm excited to see what Sam dresses like that night.
Are you getting?
What do you mean?
Are you getting all done? I'm not saying like you're going in drag, but I mean like, are you gonna like?
Yeah,
are you tarting
I show up?
Up
in drag. No,
are you tarting up?
I'm totally gonna look good. I don't go out on Friday nights not looking good.
I never get to see you.
That's
what
I mean.
We don't know what Sam looks like looking good.
Oh,
no offense
pictures.
To you right now, but
I'm very handsome.
This is 4 a.m. You know, waking up throwing on Oreo sweatshirts.
Oh yeah, this is rough. This is the roughest version of me. It's here at work, at my job.
No one's walking down a runway in here, but when you go out, like for example, Wendy, she would come in here, the same as you, sweatshirt, jeans, get to business, go home. But then she'd go out and like, good God, she's got an evening gown and heels and her hair's done to the nines. It was a different person. I want to see that Sam.
Okay. It won't be that version, but the button up will be there. The hair will be looking good.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be smelling great.
I wonder what that crowd perfume or something?
Yeah.
What's your scent? You have a scent?
I actually have Lady Gaga's perfume right now.
Yeah. Nice.
Uh-huh. Okay. I promise. I will not embarrass you that night. I'm worried that you think that we're all going to go because I think it's going to be myself.
I'm so excited for you to come.
I think Joe Robinson might go.
I'm thrilled. Josh
is a lock.
Try to embarrass me.
Josh is going to be there.
Yeah. Josh, you better be there.
I'll try my best.
And Scott, if you can make it, you would just tickle me pink. But I want to have fun, but at the same time, I don't want your friends to be like,
stop. Oh. No, go crazy. Do not reserve yourself.
Who are these old guys you brought?
Oh, God.
These are my friends.
It looks like
your uncle.
You brought a bunch of old
friends. No, my dad wants to come. So,
really?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time.
Well, let's see how many drinks I have.
I mean, what's the typical crowd, do you think, for something like this? Is it mostly gay guys? Or
no.
Is it
I mean, there are plenty of gay guys, but women, people,
gay men,
just normal
gay women,
people.
Straight men, straight women.
Looking for a good time.
Yeah. Tell you what, I'm going to skip my Cialis that dose that day. Yeah, I'm not going to need it. I can't wait. Yeah, so it'll be fun. We'll report back on Monday with how it all went.
Yes.
And we're going to, do you want to document it? Can we document it with like photos and stuff? Or you want this to be in the shadows?
No, document it.
Okay. I'm not sure. Are we allowed to take photos? It's like taking photos.
You can.
They
love it. Yeah, you should.
Okay, cool.
You know what? I just want you guys to have a good time.
That's my job.
Thank you.
Oh, I can't wait. I love how they spell meet and greet with an A.
She's got both hands. Dustin, you and I are dancing.
We are. And I'm going to sleep with a man.
We now take you behind the curtain with Justin, Scott, and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Mike, earlier in the week, you tried a little social experiment that I was concerned would go sideways. I think at the end of the week, you're no worse for the wear. You, in a social experiment, decided to tweet something negative about the Queen Bee Beyonce, who is just above reproach, beyond criticism. She is the Queen of Earth. And Scott, you had to leave to take care of some business that day, and you listened in. And it was interesting at how quickly that I think people have Google alerts or Twitter alerts that are set up for keywords. And we typed in Beyonce into this tweet. Mike said, is there anyone more overrated than Beyonce? Hashtag come at me. And he added Beyonce. He didn't subtweet. He tweeted at her. And within, 15, 20 seconds, you hit refresh, 5 retweets, 15 retweets, 27 retweets, 35 retweets. Very quickly does that thing catch on and catch fire. Did you become legitimately concerned at any point?
Occasionally the thought would cross my mind that somebody might try to track me down or something. But nobody did, obviously. Nothing happened other than, people calling me names. But just the phenomenon of these people that are so engrossed with a celebrity or musician, that phenomenon alone fascinates me, because you look at these people's profiles that, came out of the woodwork to attack me, and it's like they got pictures of Beyonce all over their background picture, their profile pictures, picture of Beyonce. It's like, is there really that little going on in your life that you need to latch on to this celebrity? And
this is this celebrity, by the way, and it goes to all of these fans and stans. They don't know you exist. Like, because you slather your social media and images of them, you're not drawing yourself closer to them. If they ever see it, they're probably going to be a little creeped out. You want another example of this when we talked about it that day? Asian Megan, good friend of the show, beautiful woman, two reasons I love her. She made just some funny offhand comment about Taylor Swift.
Oh, God.
And this new guy she was dating. And she just had a laugh. What's the over-under until this guy gets turned into a song? And here come the Tay-Tay fans at her. F-U-B, they've been together for a long time. There's already songs written about him. Joke's on you, you stupid B. Get out of here. No one wants you with your petty comments. Every single one of them have, like, Taylor Swift as their image. Or, like, it's, Tay-Tay Army for life. Or Taylor Swift is life.
I actually was going to, if you want to do another one, maybe. It's kind of past. The moment's past. But the big thing at Coachella was she came out with the marching band. Like, this whole big marching
like
band.
Like a college theme thing.
And whatever. And then Radiohead did that. Like, I looked it up in 2009. They opened up some show.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did their song 15 Steps. And they had an entire marching band behind them. And it was amazing. And I was just going to say, like, Radiohead did it first and did it better at Beyonce. And linked
yeah,
to the thing.
Yeah, man. Maybe next week we'll all take on someone. You do them. I'll do Rick and Morty fans. And
that'll be good.
Yeah, Josh, you could go head to head with Neiman in the Neimanites. Yeah.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, next week we're going to poke the bear again. Hear it now. Mike decided to take on the Bayhive on Behind the Curtain. Coachella comes and goes. Beyonce gets out there. She does her whole thing. She's got like this college kind of getup going on. She brings out the members of Destiny's Child. Crowd goes bananas. They're all screaming. They're going hooting, hollering. And she doesn't just have fans. She has what I've come to find are called stans. According to Urban Dictionary, stan is from that character in the Eminem song of the same name, Stan. An overzealous or maniacal fan of any celebrity or athlete. And we have our fans, Josh and people, put together some fun little pictures for us for like Fan Art Fridays and little video tributes and funny filters. But I don't think anybody's going to throw hands till death for us or, plunge a box cutter into someone's jugular the way they will if you cross Bay.
Yeah, I once said something about Taylor Swift on Twitter, and her fans came after me. I think she was bragging about an award she got, and I said, who cares?
Ooh.
Like 40 of her fans attacked me.
We did the Gaga versus Perry thing. Like, what, 2-3 weeks ago? And I got to tell you what, Perry's fans, you went slacking. Because Gaga's, like, what do they call her, monsters? Yeah. Man, they got up in our ass. They got on our ass. And it was just, we were putting it out there. Like, who do you find more attractive? Whatever. I was talking to a legitimate psychopath online at one point. It was this British guy who you can always tell if you're dealing with a stan because their at handle is at Lady Gaga forever, passion, love, yeah. And every image is of her. Everything is a retweet of her. You're like, oh, okay. Okay, you fully lost the plot. You're the type of person to rob a convenience store and throw money over the fence.
And yeah, over the weekend, Beyonce was trending again on social media because she headlined Coachella for the second weekend. So CNN tweets, Beyonce reigns at Coachella once again. And I replied with a GIF or GIF, however you want to say it, of Stanley from The Office.
Oh, just rolling his eyes?
Yeah, just essentially rolling his eyes. And that was enough.
Oh, you up.
Enough
you
to get up. Hate from these Beyonce worshipers.
And it's unbelievable. A level of worship, man.
It's like, not only are you obsessed with her, but you then go on social media and police other people speaking ill.
Oh, yeah.
Of your idol.
They'll come for that ass. And one of the reasons we were talking about this, it was yesterday, Scott was like, I'll take a run at her. I'll tweet something out about her. And I mean, I proclaimed loudly, don't you have a family? And I'm like 50% joking, 50% not. That's just a fan base that I don't want to rile up. The Beehive. And they'll sting you. Bzz, bzz, they'll sting you.
I'll tell you what.
We ain't doing it from our account, man.
I'll do it from my account.
Do it for... Oh, Mike.
Because I don't care. You what are they going to do? Come for me. Please. What should I tweet, though?
I don't know.
What's really going to get Beyonce people pissed off?
You come up with it. I don't know. I'm not... I can't have a hand in this, man. Evan is 2.5. I want to see him go to kindergarten one day.
What about something about her being overrated?
Oh, that's it. Yeah, something simple like that. Doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Is anyone more overrated than Beyonce?
Yeah, that or maybe just a definitive statement. You know, Beyonce is the most overrated star.
Bang, right there. Again, highly
Don't even make it a debate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's no discussion.
An exclamation.
Yeah, yeah. A period at the end of that sentence. No question mark. You know Ron Burgundy will read it. Put it a period at the end. And again, Mike, I can't advise enough against doing this. I just would like the audio to state one day when they're finding pieces of you up and down 95, the head has yet to be accounted for. This is the day everything changed for you. I'm telling you, it's bad news, man, and you got to add her.
Well, luckily, I don't own a home, so you can't find me that way.
You could firebomb an apartment complex. We have a listener by the name of Ariel. Beautiful, level-headed wife, teacher, mother. She's a joy to hang out with. You love her husband. You even remotely speak ill of Beyonce, and she just Jekyll and Hyde's. It's just she gets the Freddy Krueger fingers, and she wants to give him a massage.
I just tweeted it. I'm going to retweet it from the JSS account.
Oh, no! Don't you dare! I will unretweet that thing.
Well, I see you went with the question.
Well, I wanted people to believe it. Mm-hmm. That seemed like the most believable tweet. Again, is anyone more overrated than at Beyonce? Hashtag come at me.
Oh, great. You're inviting the swarm, Mike. All right. I just wanted to talk to people that are into her. Scott had the idea about doing a little question.
Yeah, if you're listening right now, retweet me so that more people see this.
Oh, man.
I'm at MikeAnderson979 on Twitter.
I am so nervous. Oh, man. She had a marching band cover, Rebirth brass band, and everyone lost their mind.
Oh, yeah. And here's the other thing that got me. Here's the first line of this CNN article that I tweeted
she's
at.
Wonderful.
Beyonce did not disappoint at the closing weekend of the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival on Saturday night, turning it once again into what fans are calling Beychella.
Here, here. Beychella. Oh, no. Mike. Oh, no. Okay. All right. The day everything changes for Mike at MikeAnderson979. Give this time to spread coast to coast. God, we're going to have to find a new identity for your ass. Well, just wait until Tangeray finds out about this. Is she deep into the game? Does she care?
Nah, I don't think she's a big Beyonce fan. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. Like, I'm not above pop music. I enjoy it. But I can't really say I've ever really dug any of her big singles. Have you guys? Spiegel?
I love all of them.
Spiegel, you're a big pop fan. Mm.
Crazy in Love?
I like Crazy in Love.
Single Ladies?
Irreplaceable?
No, I don't like Single Ladies. I cannot relate to Single Ladies.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan. I could take it or leave it.
I love even original Destiny's Child. Make sure this audio is saved. Matter of fact, it's all I listen to. All music to me is Beyonce. If it's not Beyonce, Tell Your Story, Walking.
But again,
I want nothing
it's
to do
like
with it.
She's above criticism at this point.
That's the thing. It's like if you, oh no, it's already started.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's, oh no. Oh, we got a cinch. Mike, what have you done? I told you not. Oh. Oh.
Keep retweeting me, people.
Oh no. Don't.
This is the day we take the power back from Beyonce.
Don't you, we us, man. This is on you.
What I see, what am I looking for here?
At Mike Anderson, right. 979.
But what is going on?
33 retweets.
Okay.
I mean, he tweeted 2 minutes ago.
You sound like a hater.
Oh, no. 44 retweets. Oh, keep it locked here for a developing situation as Mike has decided to take on Beyonce head on.
You watch. Twitter will shut down my account before the end of the day.
They'll pull it. They'll pull your damn account. You won't have an account anymore. Let's quit a refresh on here. We are at 55 retweets, 11 comments, hashtag come at me. Oh, man.
Watch the president retweet you.
Watch. Jesus. Oh, God, please. Oh, no.
Please. How awesome would that be?
It's the worst thing we've ever done.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
So we talked to a guy earlier in the week from the Baltimore Sun about an article we had read the day before. The article was read on Monday. We talked to the author Tuesday, Dog Lovers, A City's Menace by Patrick Hahn. And when we read the article on Monday, it just dripped with smarm and agenda. And then we did our due diligence to give the man equal time, and we get a hold of the author and talk to him on Tuesday. And if you want to get behind the curtain here, not sure where the live wire cameras were pointed during the interview. If Josh was able to have reached through the phone and pulled his lips off with his bare hands, I feel like you might have. Your face during the interview you'll hear coming up was painted red with rage.
Was it?
It was.
It's just he had this annoying delivery about, sometimes it's not the message, it's the delivery. But he
not
made
what you say, how you say
yeah,
it.
Yeah. He made some good points, but I think there was there were deeper issues. I would have liked to have known, did a dog attack him at one, because there was a deep dislike for dogs, it sounded like.
Yeah, and I even bring that up in the interview, or maybe it was the day prior, just that I don't understand people that dislike dogs, unless you were like attacked by a pack of wild dogs.
I don't
want
to call you an idiot, but you sound like an idiot. What do you mean, Mike? You don't understand people. Not everybody has to like dogs.
I'm not.
You're one of the people this guy is talking about in the damn article.
Maybe I am.
The person where it's like, everybody must like my dog. Everybody must like dogs. Guess what? No.
All right, well, let me rephrase
that.
Don't, I love the movie.
People that dislike dogs. I understand maybe being indifferent and not owning one, not really caring about them.
I understand
them,
that, too.
But to dislike them, unless, again, you were attacked.
Oh, stop.
I just don't get it.
Well,
they're so
this
great.
Guy would be okay.
What's
because
not
he reminded
to get?
Us he was a 200-pound bodybuilder repeatedly.
Well, why wouldn't you like a dog?
Mike, people have different reasons for
reason.
Liking and disliking
Let's
everything
hear.
On this planet.
They poop.
Go on. Let's hear a reason.
I don't, Mike. I don't. I'm not going to sit here and list all the reasons,
exactly.
But for you to
there
not understand, you just sound ridiculous.
Out of all the animals, though, I mean, that is the one animal that is incredibly loyal,
according
incredibly
to you.
Loving.
According to you,
great to pet.
I got a scar on my cheek that might beg otherwise.
According to you, that's your opinion.
So, out of every animal out there, I feel like they're the ones we should hate the least.
Well, they are. I mean, that is an accurate statement. Yes, they probably are, but that doesn't mean everybody has to like them.
Penguins seem pretty great.
Just because they're the animal we should hate the least, which they are. They're man's best friend for a reason. But that doesn't mean everybody needs to have to love them and like them and want to pet them.
I think really, maybe this is more about Roland Park and the douchebags that live there.
Yes.
I think it speaks to a little bit of that that elite subsection.
Yes. That's the heart of this issue.
Yeah. He was their martyr. He was he was their spokesperson. He was fighting on their behalf because you read in the article like the dogs turned the park into a toxic waste site that they had to scoop all the dirt and throw it away.
Yeah, it's like, really?
Yeah. Well,
really?
Listen in, hear it now as we run it back, and just know that as you listen, Josh's face was a crimson red mask of hatred. On Behind the Curtain. All right, jumping right to the phones.
Yeah, guy Mike had a big problem with yesterday.
Yeah, we were going over this article from the Baltimore Sun, written by a gentleman of the name Patrick D. Hahn. Dog lovers, a city's menace. Mike, refresh us before we go to the phones of a couple of the things
yeah,
he
Mike.
Said.
Well, I mean, he took a run. He took a run at dog owners in the city. And I'm sure, Pat, have you gotten any hate mail yet? I imagine you must have gotten some sort of vitriolic replies to this article.
Well, first of all, let me say it's a pleasure to be back. As you recall, last time I was here,
yeah,
talking about my snow removal piece, the people who put down chairs.
Yes.
Claim parking spaces.
Oh, we didn't put the two and two together. That's right.
Yeah, I got a torrent of hate mail for that one.
Gotcha.
For 3 days, I was the most hated man in Baltimore.
And you loved every second of it. So, yeah.
And I was expecting a torrent of hate mail for this one, too.
And did you, nothing yet? Well, after this segment, you'll probably get
what
it.
What I got was a torrent of letters thanking me for writing this piece.
Look, I kind of went through it and I reread it again today. And I mean, you have a particular way of writing things and phrasing things that there is a bit of...
you got some colorful verbiage.
Yeah, colorful verbiage and a slant to it. But when you just look at it as a whole... these people need to keep their dogs on leashes and act like their dogs aren't holier than thou, right? I mean, that's pretty
exactly.
much.
Exactly.
But yeah, our producer, Mike, who is he's backing down today. He had a big problem with you yesterday.
He did not have a big problem. We had some fun with the piece, but I mean, I do agree with the core of your argument, too, that I mean, you got to keep your dog on a leash for other people's safety and your dog's safety, too. I can't imagine having my dog off a leash. I'd be petrified. He'd run out in the street.
Now, Patrick, do you own a dog or another animal?
No, I don't.
You don't own a cat? Because I thought for a second maybe you were a cat owner.
Might have been a cat guy.
Just hate dogs.
Do you hate dogs?
Do you not like them?
No, I don't hate dogs. I don't particularly care for them.
Oh,
but,
well, okay.
Now we're getting
that's
to the
neither here nor there.
Oh, that is here nor there. What do you mean? That means something.
You might like blueberry pie, but I'll bet you don't want one thrown in your face.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Okay.
No, I'll take it. It's going to take me all day to figure that out.
I don't like that.
But I'll take it.
Oh, wow.
Did you happen? Like, can I ask a question? You in the piece, you wrote an interesting tale told about a man who grew a garden, and he grew vegetables and spices and what have you in this garden, and a woman or a man, I can't recall who would let their dog urinate. She'd walk the dog. The dog would go into that one spot and pee all the time. And then
he said, madam, I eat the things that come out of there. And her reply was, well, why would you plant a garden where my dog pees?
Yeah, I mean, I have no way of verifying this. It's a secondhand account, but
I figured I'd
throw it out there and
I
want to
know if you knew,
for themselves.
Did you know the man in question? Okay, but you heard that tale told from someone else. Gotcha, okay.
You mentioned in your column that dogs come at you growling, teeth bared, clearly intending to do me bodily harm. Now, is it possible they pick up on your anti-dog vibes?
Yeah, that's what it is.
And if so, who can blame them?
Yeah, well, I don't blame them. I blame the owners.
God, he's got an answer for everything.
If your dog is not on a leash, it's not under your control. And I know people will say, my dog is under strict voice control. Well, these dogs that are under strict voice control, they're like the Loch Ness Monster. I keep hearing about them, but I've never seen it.
And you also kind of take a shot at purebred. You call them inbred. I mean, is that really fair?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what purebred means. It means they're all descended from the same bunch of dogs.
But how is that relevant to your argument?
It's just, yeah.
Well, I think it bespeaks a puzzling estrangement from nature that people think this is a good thing, and it's got a lot of drawbacks. I mean, you can read about, there's all kinds of hereditary defects that are passed on in these purebred lines.
Now, I did see another part kind of the article that we did see also, and it did seem, Pat, that you're putting yourself over a little bit. What about people who are not 200-pound weightlifters? I feel like you kind of threw that in there to be like, watch out, I got a badass here. And I get a look at you on Twitter, and by God, you are spot on. You're every pound of 200, and it looks like you know your way around picking up heavy stuff and setting it back down. But that part jumped out at me about you being a 200-pound weightlifter that you kind of shoehorned in there.
Well, I've gotten letters from people saying, I'm not a 200-pound weightlifter, and I'm terrified of these dogs that are coming at me. So that was my point. What about the people who are not 200-pound weightlifters? I wonder how many of them have just given up.
Well, who cares
on going
about
to our city's park?
We're talking to Patrick DeHaan. He has an article up now at the boat. Is it BaltimoreSun.com? Is that where they can find it?
And it's on our website.
And it's on our website, too. Dog lovers, a city menace, ? So what is your vision of a perfect city with dogs and dog owners?
Well, two inescapable facts of urban life are small interior spaces and shared exterior spaces.
Right.
And space is at a premium in the city. I think public space should be used for humans, for walking, jogging, cycling, sketching, bird watching, contemplation. And none of these people doing these things bother anybody else on a consistent basis that irresponsible dog owners do. you know, as I said, I don't much care for dogs, but I do respect them. They are large, active, highly intelligent animals that evolved to run free out of doors.
Cats are assholes. You should do another article. You should do a sister piece entitled Cat Lovers, a Nation's Shame.
I mean, but when you painted that picture, I almost got like, I got a visual in my mind, Patrick, of a park where somebody's watching birds and somebody's sketching and there's a blanket out and people are having a picnic.
Yeah.
And there's a man playing with his child, walking a child.
All right, go catch.
And then all of a sudden, off in the distance, come the irresponsible dog owners and they descend on the park and they just cause chaos.
Oh, run!
This is the vision I had in my head.
You're right. He's right.
Now, you said that you see the outdoors as for humans. Would your ideal outdoors exclude dogs?
If they're going to have them, they should be on leashes. But I would say, if you choose to own a dog, you should have enough space that dog can run and exercise at will. And if you do, then you don't need to be letting it running through the parks. And if you don't, I would say you need to think long and hard about whether you have any business owning a dog at all.
So if somebody has a small yard in a row house or lives in an apartment, they should not own a dog?
That would be my opinion. Yeah, I mean,
what do most you live in Roland Park, Pat? What do most people own there? You said there's a lot of big
besides Rolls Royces,
Subarus, NPR tote bags.
Yeah, well, we have lots of dogs, big and small. I behaved the way the average unleashed dog does in a city park, I would be in handcuffs.
If you just ran over to my picnic and just took a dump right on the plate.
No part of you, Pat, enjoy petting a dog? I almost feel like that's like a basic human.
Would you stop, Mike? Not everybody's the same, okay? Just because
I can't imagine not pet a dog.
Oh, stop.
I can't.
Well,
I
don't, you know, as I said, I don't care for them. I've been known to make exceptions for that policy based on the individual dog. But it's the almost compulsory nature of this. I mean, they don't seem to see there's any problem. I mean, I haven't done anything to solicit contact with these dogs. And yet the owners seem to see no problem with their dog coming into my space and expect me to drop what I'm doing at a moment's notice and perform some kind of little display to appease their dog.
Well, who's this?
And
Don't worry, he's friendly.
No, he's fine. I notice, again, we got to jump here in a second, but it seems to be, this sentence here seems to solidify your beef with the owner, not the dog. Towards the beginning of the article, I am never ceased to be amazed at the spectacular planet-sized arrogance of some of the city's dog owners. Aldous Huxley once said, to his dog, every man is Napoleon, hence the constant popularity of dogs. That's all well and good, but when that Napoleon complex extends to non-consenting third parties, not so much. So your beef seems to be more with the person with the dog off the leash than that beautiful, pure, angelic dog itself.
Well,
yeah, I mean, dogs are what they are. When they have enough room to run and exercise at will, they have an owner who's conscientious enough to train that dog to respect other people and people's property. That's fine. I don't think that description applies to one out of 50 urban dogs.
Well, Pat, we got to jump. We appreciate your time. We're going to put you on hold, and we're going to organize a celebrity boxing match between you and Josh.